For August the 19th, 2016, we talk about No Man's Sky, the new Call of Duty zombie mode, and we ask you what makes you choose PC or console for a specific game. Welcome to Level 162. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. And I did not prepare an intro. I don't know if there is any actual like opening matter. I think I'm just going to lean on the fact that if we do not say anything about Gamescom, it's because we're recording before it even starts. So if something mind-blowing happens... you know, please call understand
that fix it in post, Cole.
please understand that we are coming to you through time.
I'm making the bet that there's going to be some sort of huge apocalypse before we actually get to Gamescom. We don't need to talk about anything related to it.
Yeah, we always joke about that when we so by we I mean Gary and I. When we record stuff like crazy far in advance is like, oh, you know, and unless we die, in which case, hello from the grave. And eventually, you know, just every day that you're alive, you know, just there's more chances that something's going to get you. Satellite's going to fall. But yeah, it gets a little bit macabre, a little bit grim. But counting on some apocalypse. Yes. So we're going to bet on that. I don't know.
We should focus on the happy apocalypse lipstick instead.
Oh, from Pitch Industries?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There we go. There we go. Wait a minute. Is Pitch Industries going to be at... I need to talk to them. I need to talk to the fictional versions of Gary and Brayton that are on that show. Oh, man. So, you know, I can't think of any, like, banter stuff. Anybody have anything they want to share with the class?
I'll be talking about No Man's Sky whenever we get to the games portion.
Ooh.
Hell yeah.
Wee.
I'm going to throw in on that too, actually. So.
Ooh.
Wee.
Oh. Yeah, I've actually got new games to talk about this week, which is good. Dennis, how about you? You got anything big going on?
I will be talking about No Man's Sky as well.
Holy shit.
Oh my gosh.
I'm the only one who won't be. That's because I finally finished. Yeah, well, I fucking finished VLR. That's my news. God damn.
I think it's hey kids, get off my sky now.
Oh man. Well, I mean, it sounds like we've got a lot of that, but that's for later. That's for later in the show.
Only thing I have is that my butt hurts from doing marathon training and running up a lot of hills. That is all.
So
that is like, all I've got. My butt hurts.
This is just like a general fatigued muscle ache as opposed to an acute pain.
Yes, at this point.
Or versus being angry on the internet.
Yeah.
How many miles are you running at now?
Oh, it's not like it's more about the time that we're running and the type of training that we're doing. Like we're doing 7 or 8 right at the moment, but we're working up mostly doing hills and just kind of like endurance, you know, like interval training and stuff like that. We are going to start our long runs in September. So because this is a very, very long training program that I'm on. It's like 28 weeks. So it'll be a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is going to culminate in you doing a marathon in October?
No, that's the half marathon.
The half marathon.
I signed up for a half marathon, a 25K, and a 30K, which are all the warm-up series. Mm-hmm. And then the actual marathon is in January. So, yeah, it'll be a while.
It sounds like a video game.
Yeah.
Even a half marathon is much farther than I have ever run at one point in time. So.
I think it's further than I've ever driven. Oh, man. Well, that's cool. But Jala has another early rise tomorrow in order to go train. Yeah. So why don't we proceed? Why don't we kind of chug through this? We've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Oh boy, I did have the Slack channel open and I was going to throw off to somebody who had the most relevant and timely, but I navigated away so I could tell Dennis what's for lunch tomorrow if he wants to come join us.
I'm gonna be in a different building. I'm somewhere for research tomorrow.
Okay, all right.
No, I will eat your lunch one of these days.
I understand. I mean, it's not even my lunch. I'm inviting you in the side door so you can
wait,
come.
Dennis, you're stealing Cole's lunches?
Yeah, basically. That's essentially what's happening.
Oh man, let's see here, Jala. Tell us about this crazy kill screen that we've got.
Okay, well, I've got something random, like usual. It is something called Close Your. It is a narrative-driven game by Goodbye World Games, and it's about a man's life that uses your webcam to track your eye movements. This is on PC and Mac, I believe, and PC, Mac, and Linux. Every time the player blinks, the story skips forward in time for a varied length. It can be a month or several years forward in time whenever you blink. So it basically the kind of premise is like life passes you by in the blink of an eye, literally. Like that's what's happening here. It won the IGF award for, I don't know, best student game or something like that. It's on Kickstarter right now because the dev is hoping to use funding to expand the scope of the game from not just a guy, but a randomly generated man or woman. Maybe it's an alcoholic. Maybe it's, you know, like somebody else, you know, and that kind of thing. So the experience varies every time you play. And it takes inspiration from the game Apartment. I thought that we had discussed that one on a different brief, but that was a totally different game that I was thinking of that also took place in an apartment and was a narrative-driven game, but it wasn't that one. So I've downloaded the demo for Apartment to see what that is. I've looked at the trailer for that, and that looks interesting. Close Your also looks interesting, so I'm actually backing the Kickstarter for that. So, yeah. It just is an interesting, like, because one of the things that I like about indie games in particular is that a lot of times they like to just jack with their ways of telling stories and presenting the material to you and just kind of like, you know, giving you different, methods by which to absorb whatever it is they're trying to get across to you. And this particular game, this is the first time I've heard of something like this. And again, it's probably out there already somewhere else, but, you know, where it's, like each of the narrative sequences lasts only as long as the player is paying attention to it. The moment that you blink or turn away or something, then it switches. So that's actually pretty neat.
Nice. No, this, I love the art style for this. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same art style we use for a lot of our videos, at my day job. Yeah, this looks pretty cool. That's a neat idea. I'm surprised they didn't hop on that lucrative click branding. You know, the Adam Sandler movie?
Are you referencing the Adam Sandler movie?
Yeah.
Wow. Deep cut.
I don't know if it's deep. I think it's incredibly shallow. But it's like a very poorly dug latrine. So can you obviously this is in front of me and I could read it, but I want to ask you this question. Is it like a fixed series of scenes that you are kind of like looking at and then it's telling you the story at random? Or are you like trying to go through and do something to change it and then the blinks kind of like carry you forward based on what you have just recently done?
Honestly, I don't really know.
So I don't based really on know. My based uh-huh. on based on looking through this article, it looks like the game that they showed so far was pretty linear, but the guy is talking about how they want to seriously increase the scope of the storytelling within the game with the funding from Kickstarter.
Yeah, and that's what their Kickstarter is for.
That sends up a huge red flag for me. Like, yeah. I love this idea. That's something that can only be done in the form of a video game or in the form of like an interactive medium, and is really cool. And if they drown themselves in Kickstarter promises to make this have 60,000 different endings, I am really worried that it's going to strip it of its meaning.
Yeah, a Kickstarter to increase scope sounds like a diet to increase the amount of food. I don't know. It's I was about to
cholesterol.
Yeah, I guess maybe like, but I don't know. I could have either thought about that more or thought about it quicker. Instead, mm-hmm. I fired the cannon indoors. It just like that seems to be like a very bad recipe to me.
Yeah.
Well, especially because the example that he gives is he wants the game to randomly roll the player's gender every time you play. And I'll start by saying I don't know the story that they've already created, so maybe it centers around gender. But going from the assumption that that's an auxiliary thing, that is like the case study to me in bloat, or you know, giving Kickstarter promises that get attention and then really don't put anything meaningful in the game, but increase the load on the dev team to deliver those promises by like tenfold.
Yeah.
Well, at the same time, though, it looks like they've been doing some work on this for a very long time. In that article, I clicked on the prior article that they had covered the same game back in 2014, and the art is totally different, and it looks pretty like Cro-Magnon compared to what it looks like now. So, I mean, like, they've been putting stuff into it for some time is what it looks like. So, I mean, even if they end up getting bogged down and, you know, whatever, even if they release just what they have right now rather than what they're trying to do, mm-hmm. that's okay by me. I'm fine with that. And I'm fine with backing something like this, which has such an interesting idea behind it. So,
you know what would be interesting is if they had jump scares in the game designed to try to make you blink.
How does that work? Like, if something makes me jump, I don't blink. Like, tell me how that's supposed to work.
Okay,
the kid just claps his hands in front of the screen. Yeah.
There's a stretch goal for a little peripheral that you can mount on top of your monitor that at certain intervals just blasts a burst of sawdust straight at your face.
There you go.
Yeah, no, this is go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that the time from when this releases to when there's someone just wearing like a Halloween mask or whatever in front of the computer to fool it is going to be next to zero.
Oh, yeah. Or, you know, so just somebody goes full Ludovico. Yeah.
That is an interesting point because, like, how much are they going to have to program? You know, like, they're going to have mm-hmm. to have, you know, they're not going to make a person's entire life, right? On the chance that somebody's never going to blink.
Yeah.
and then maybe part of the game is like you have to decide when you want to advance, you know.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, see, like I was saying, I don't really mind if there's problems with it or if it doesn't meet all the expectations that they're dreaming up for it. Mm-hmm. The fact that this thing exists, I want to still see it. I want to play it, and I don't mind giving them money so I can do that. So, you know, either way, I'm fine with that. And I am going to play the apartment demo because that's out on the internet too. Apartment is, again, another indie game that they say that they took inspiration from. So I want to take a look at that demo.
Nice.
So.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Yep.
Let's see here. I'm going to go ahead and do mine. So this is some follow-up on last week's story about the controversy around the Overwatch loot boxes, specifically the ones related to the Rio Summer Games. So complain about stuff. And actually, the fix that Blizzard has made, the adjustment that they has made, you know, kind of seems to be laser-targeted at kind of the problem that people pointed out with the way these things were presented. But it also seems to be to serve specifically to create a wedge and create an opening for them to do much more of the same later on. So they've made a change to the verbiage, and trust me, this is exciting. They've made a change to the verbiage in the descriptions of loot boxes. To change it from saying you can, use your credits from the items that you already have. So if you get an item that you already own, it's turned into credits, which before you could use to, you know, buy specific things or, you know, just kind of like fold back in for additional chances, right? So it used to be, hey, acquire any specific cosmetics you want. They have taken that and changed it to you can use this to acquire many customization options, addressing the concern that people have. Well, not addressing it, but just admitting to like, hey, this is the plan that they, you know, with the Rio ones, they've taken away the ability to just kind of like claim back some credit, or at least another chance to, you know, get another loot box, you know, with the repeat items that they get. And what they've done is they've kind of just cemented these special event things as, you know, their own separate tier of collectibles up here.
Yep. And which, so they've accurately reflected the shitty thing they're doing. Congratulations.
Well, it didn't take long. But then again, I don't know if this ruins anything. Like, this is purely cosmetic, and you know, that's very much like an opt-in kind of thing. Like, I increasingly can't bring myself to feel annoyed about this, but I understand that people did want to get in there, and like, if the text didn't match the reality, then all of a sudden, like, you know, anger comes when an expectation's over here and reality's over here, right? Like, that disparity creates the kind of upsetness that we've seen.
It just feels so wrong to see whale bait in this game. Hmm. Like, that feels dirty, especially because it hasn't gone free to play yet. But they've just kind of up front been like, yeah, you can pay us for this game and we'll have all this free to play bullshit. Hmm. Like, they can have their cake and eat it too, or have their cake and take ours to eat too, or whatever. Like, and this, you know, I'm being a bit hyperbolic. This hasn't caused me to stop playing the game, and I don't harbor any ill will towards them. Like, I think it's a bad business decision, but it's no more than that.
Yeah.
But still, I would hate to see more games mirror this in the future. And I think that's where we're headed. And it just sucks to see a team like Blizzard, who typically put so much care and so much attention to this sort of thing, go that route.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this casts kind of a pall on other kind of like similar events that they may want to do in the future. Like, you know, these kinds of events, you know, I mean, Blizzard is learning a lot, just a lot from Valve in this. Like, these kinds of events can, you know, get people interested in the game again, especially if they wandered away. Like, managing the way this stuff trickles out is a way to make sure a game has legs. And obviously Overwatch does not need much help now in the 6 months afterwards, but like, you know, they can't take anything for granted. And something that kind of like, you know, maybe people will get used to this and water will find its level. You know, I think that this might change a little bit of the enthusiasm for other stuff like this in the future.
Agreed.
Yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to give that update because it caught my eye talking about it. And that weird little policy stuff intrigues me so.
And one of our listeners pointed out that the loot boxes can be earned through regular leveling up. So there is a way to get them without paying. So that makes it slightly better.
The Rio loot boxes or the standard ones?
The Rio boxes. So okay. I think during this event it defaults to the Rio boxes, although you can select which one you want it to be when you go to open it.
Okay.
However, leveling up once you're past like level 10 happens very infrequently.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have those credits that until now you were told you could spend to get any content in the game, any cosmetic content in the game, that's still kind of the main thing that people were taking issue with in the first place. So, yes, there was a very small out, but it's still overall not a great thing.
Yeah, it seems to be super weird, right? So part of the motivation behind this, and I forget who it was who said this. There's a quote in the article here that I'm looking at here. Sometimes we want things to feel rare and special. If we need to make things less rare, we'll have to reconsider our design philosophy in the future. Something like this here. That's Jeff Kaplan, the director of Overwatch. Managing the rarity of a thing that doesn't have any monetary value assigned to it feels like a really weird thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then again, I don't understand the collector mindset in a lot of instances. So I'm just an alien talking about a planet that I will never visit. Yeah. Ben, this is an interesting story. Tell me about Final Fantasy 15.
Boom, it got delayed a couple months.
Oh,
that's about it.
So to November, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to come out September 30th. It got delayed to November 29th. The game developers commented that they were working on a day one patch that they were going to have to make people download if it were going to come out on September 30th. Mm-hmm. But they're going to include what they were going to make a day one patch on the disc that'll come out November 29th.
Yeah.
So take that for what you will. I don't know. I don't know what else to say beyond that.
I think it's a good idea, because anything they can do to make sure this game has a good launch, you know, it's not true anymore that, like, oh, a delay lasts for a month, but a bad game lasts forever. Like, it's a positive thing about the medium that patches and fixes exist and developers can get in there and monkey around with the game. However, somebody getting this, not being able to get the patch, them creating issues with the patch that they didn't quite anticipate ahead of time and trying to bounce back from that, like, I don't know. Like, I would much rather them, like, put it out, especially since they're putting it out across, like, a bunch of platforms, I think.
Yes, coming out PS4 and Xbox 360.
You mean Xbox One?
Yes, that's what I meant. 360 okay. Divided by 360.
Might as well be, am I right?
But, yeah, I think that's a solid plan. I don't know. Then again, I was also dreading it coming out so soon because I wasn't sure if I was going to have time to play it before PRGE. So yeah. It's a win-win.
Yay!
We weren't ready for you yet. Yeah.
Oh, man. And Dennis, how about this Call of Duty thing?
Yeah, I think we literally had the discussion on this show whether or not zombies in space was going to happen with Call of Duty Infinite. And it's happened, and in the biggest, baddest, most Far Cry Blood Dragon way possible.
Okay.
So it is not enough to have zombies in space. You need 80 zombies in space. That is not 80 zombies. It is 80s, the decade zombies.
As far as zombies go, I mean, I'm pretty sure you maybe kill maybe even less than 80 zombies in the course of the entire first Resident Evil game. But zombie inflation has really gotten out of control.
Yeah.
80 zombies is not that many at all.
No, it's not. But there are way more than 80s zombies in what they're calling Zombies in Spaceland.
Okay.
It's a mode for Call of Duty Infinite in which you are actors hired by a director in this video game to go to a theme park and fight your way out by fighting through zombies that are all in, like, 80s getup.
Okay.
So they have really embraced, I feel like over time, the zombies mode in Call of Duty has just gotten crazier and crazier. Ben, you can tell me.
It's like the Saints Row end of the game.
It is. Yeah. It's just where they felt permission to just go completely off the deep end. So it is a class-based mode. And those classes are the jock, the nerd, the valley girl, and the rapper.
The rapper.
It's about as 80s as it gets here. But yeah, I mean, looks to have a lot in common with the previous zombies mode. But per our previous discussion where we totally called this, it is only a matter of time until we get zombie dragons in Spaceland.
I think you mean a Draco Lich?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I want the Luck Dragon in Spaceland. That is the only acceptable way for that to go down.
Okay. That's the never-ending story.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. I never saw that growing up, and so I watched it recently, just like on a lark. It was on Netflix, and I will never get that time back in my life. So,
it's one of those things. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are like, at that, but it's a little bit of a rough movie.
I know what the reference is about now.
Oh yeah, no, I think that, but it's one of those things where. If something is referenced enough times, you get like a good sense for the primary text.
Yeah. but anyway, so this looks to be fun. Since it is something that we kind of called ahead of time, I thought I'd bring it up.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, if it's something that the developers are having fun making.
they really look like they are too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and of note, they have voice talents of Paul Rubens and David Hasselhoff in the game. As well as Jay Farrow.
Oh yeah, he's a SNL guy. He was their Obama impersonator for several years.
Oh well, there you go. They all three of them will be lending their voices to this mode.
I'm excited about the Paul Rubens thing, and Jay Farrow. So yeah, I can take or leave Hasselhoff. He knows what he did.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question, and you, if you take the time, and we're so appreciative that you do, you answer it. This was a question that was offered by Greg. And Dennis, you put it up?
Yes, that is correct.
So see, it's important who put it up, because that's the person who
one of these days we're gonna think to ask or figure out beforehand.
Also, I can look and see on my special admin view who posted it in our name. So like that, this is literally just me being incompetent. But Dennis, what is the question that Greg had us ask the nice people?
Yeah, and Greg is a listener of the show, obviously. So
yeah,
not the secret sixth host that we haven't told you about, although maybe
we keep him on mute.
He's just screaming in the mic the whole time. Anyway,
it's a fun joke. We have fun around here. we hell banned Greg. Go ahead, Dennis. Yeah.
Well, I thought this one was timely because of No Man's Sky and the attempted PC launch. Are either of you playing it on PC?
No.
New. No.
Okay,
I didn't mean to answer for you, but I am not. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
So all things being equal, glaring at No Man's Sky there, would you rather play a game on console or on a PC? Is the answer different for different types of games?
It was
submitted by Greg.
Yeah, and I'm going to get us started here with Michael, who says, I've always preferred console. Stability in operating is very important to me. Consoles, more or less, guarantee a game will run out of the box. That's a big plus. Also, I like a good controller in my hands. The one exception is shooters, which handle very well on a mouse and keyboard. And I have a feeling that Michael's response is going to be very... a lot of people are going to agree with Michael.
Yes.
He's not stepping on any toes with that response.
No.
Yeah, that stability thing is a big factor for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jello, what does Amanda say?
Amanda says, I love PC gaming, but I prefer being less isolated, more social in my house while gaming. It's difficult to do that with PC gaming, though. The rise of living room PC gaming really interests me.
Oh, yeah. So. It's the best. Do it.
Yep. I have not heard of that. Is that essentially just treating a PC like a console, or...?
It's doing what I do. Like, you know, you either just plug it right into your TV, or you get something like a Steam Link, and then you just have a controller, a remote mouse and keyboard. I just, you know, you're not sitting 1 foot away from a screen. You're, you know, kicked back, and you're doing cool stuff and making friends.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Hey, want to come over and watch me play a video game? Cool.
I don't have more than one controller because I'm not a maniac. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I like games that work right out of the gate. I don't think I've ever modded anything, so I'm fairly certain I should consider myself a console guy, a Sony guy to be exact. But my four favorite games of all time were PC exclusives to begin with, so yep, still a console guy.
Well, you can't say that and then not say what those are.
It was Roller Coaster Tycoons 1 through 4,
oh, okay.
I assume.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what they were. That's what they are now. You're bad.
Yeah. Let's see here, Dennis. This is good timing. What does Phil say?
Yeah, Phil says, depends on the type of game and the mindset I'm in at the time. If I want better performance or to watch video or listen to podcasts while playing, I'll choose PC. If I want something to chill with and or able to play in multiple places, I'll choose PS4. Luckily, streaming to and from consoles and PC is becoming easier and easier.
That's a big deal, actually, and I'm glad that Phil brought that up.
Being able to stream?
Yeah. So I'm still looking for a good, really long HDMI cable and HDMI splitter. So I can move my Steam Link in my bedroom, because there are lots of little JRPG style games that I have on Steam that would be really fun to play in bed, you know. But I mean, I might as well just, if I'm doing that, I might as well just get another Steam Link. Like that box is really good.
Yeah, sure.
By which I mean the Steam Link. Like it is a neat little device. Dennis, are you still getting mileage out of the PS4 to Vita streaming?
Yeah, I'm actually getting even more mileage out of it after I realized you can uncheck an option in the settings on the Vita that greatly increases the range at which you can do that remote play.
Oh, wow.
So it's literally a checkbox. It's something called like Wi-Fi power save or something like that.
Okay.
And that changed it so I could effectively use the Vita when I was able close enough to the PS4 to directly connect wirelessly. Mm-hmm. To now I can just do it anywhere over the internet wirelessly.
Nice.
So now I can play pretty much. I've only tried it up in the bedroom, which is on the other side of the house. But right. Theoretically now I could do it from anywhere.
Oh wow. Imagine like if you try to do it from outside your network, you might run into like you must open up a port and meh.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. My goal is to on one of those flights that have Wi-Fi, get connected to my PS4 via my Vita.
So you can play a PS4 game. So you can play a slideshow of Scholar of the First Sin.
Yeah. But I will have done it, and that is just a cool thing.
Why do people climb on Everest to get all of the sex?
why do people fly over Mount Everest? It's a video game, apparently.
Oh man, let's see here. Graham writes. Most games I'd rather play on PC, especially shooters. My recent playthrough of Doom was hindered by playing with a PS4 controller instead of a keyboard and mouse. On the other hand, there are some games that just feel weird playing on a PC, and I'd rather play them on a console. This mostly applies to a lot of Japanese games, especially JRPGs. I grew up on consoles and PC, but most of my favorite Japanese franchises were on consoles, whereas Western games were on PC. Yeah. Although, like, that's kind of changing. It's not like Japanese games don't work. Like, we see a bunch of stuff, you know, from traditionally, like, really, really Japanese developers, like, hitting Steam and thriving, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Which is just great. Like, just let me put everything in Steam. Like, just make that the big box that I go to where all my games is so I can play them whenever.
Like a Steam box?
Yeah. Well, not exactly a Steam box. that was a weird fucking garbage mess, but yeah. Jala, what does Nathan say?
Nathan says, the TV is almost exclusively a Netflix machine in my house and almost always on, so I have to default to PC. Essentially, what I'm saying is that I bought Demon's Souls and Shadow of the Colossus a year ago, and I still haven't beaten them purely for logistical reasons.
Aw. Those are the two games you want to play.
You need to get on Shadow of the Colossus, man.
Is there that much content on Netflix?
You know, if the library didn't change all the time, although I guess you would just have to do like one big ingest and then track what is added, just like look at the diffs essentially, mm-hmm. the delta as us programmers say, look at that. I'm sure that you could actually like add up the duration and see like how many lifetimes or how many years it would take to watch all of it from beginning to end.
Yeah, that's scary stuff.
Yeah.
I want to do that just for the number of like knockoff movies that are on Netflix.
Oh yeah. All of the, documentaries about food and weed and weed foods.
That might as well be a section on Netflix.
Yeah. Oh man, I just have to like downvote all of them. Don't show me this again, please. It's not that I don't want to find out about weed. It's just that I learned everything I needed to from the History Channel, you know, 15 years ago on their History of Vice series. Yeah, no, logistical reasons is a terrible reason not to play a game. Not terrible like, oh, you should try harder, but like I understand it, like, and it doesn't feel satisfying,
particularly painful.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's actually why, you know, I've said it before, I have a PS3 that I have never really messed with because it's just like it's in the same room as my PC and that's in a separate building from the rest of the house. Yeah. And it's more comfortable for me to play my PC than to look up to where my TV is mm-hmm. to play the console. So there's like no point and it's uncomfortable. So,
so you're not
you
gonna want
like,
to do it. There's friction.
I'm not gonna want to do it. There's, you know, like, but whereas more recently I've been playing a lot of stuff on my Vita because, you know, pouring rain or blistering heat or whatever, you know, because of where I live. So I'm like, fuck that. I'm going to lay in bed and play a game on my Vita because that's convenient, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're laden with those logistical issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Let's see here. Was that you who did that? Who read that one? Sorry.
You need to check that box on that stupid index card.
I really
of yours.
Do, yeah.
I'm telling you.
Ben, what does Derek say?
Derek says, I prefer console. I think PC leaves too much room for variety between different players' experiences. With PC, my opinions of a game may be different from someone else's for no other reason than what the graphics card we had been playing it on. With a closed platform like a traditional console, I know that my Tomb Raider looked, sounded, and played just like your Tomb Raider. Aside from that, I grew up with consoles, so that experience just feels right to me, whereas PC feels kind of alien.
Hmm.
I get this PC feeling alien thing. It's a weird new world.
You know, like I played all consoles up until like college, and I still don't have a problem with either one of them. So I don't know, like it's okay. New things are okay. It's fine.
I would love to.
I mean, like go with what you're comfortable with, I guess. But you know, still it's all right. Change is good. It's fine.
I would love to get like a quantified reason why it feels different, you know, because I understand that, like I get a little bit of it. I just wonder if it's like, you know, again, all things being equal, like if you took a PC and you ran it through an HDMI cable to the same TV that you play your console games on and used the same controller, like if it was all just an Xbox 360 controller, would it still feel different and why? Like if there was like a double blind kind of thing, like is it just the trappings, like the space that fills in between?
I think it's kind of analogous to like a water fountain that's shaped like a toilet bowl, where it's like you just feel weird drinking out of it. It's kind of like it feels weird to play games on the same space that you're used to using like the internet for, or doing like whatever you do on your computer for. You know, mm-hmm. it just seems like that. If you're used to playing games on consoles, it seems like that's just not the space for games, you know? Like, yeah. A computer screen doesn't feel the same as, like, a television screen.
Yeah.
What I would say is on PC, there's always that psychological nag that it's all my fault.
you built it wrong.
No, exactly. Like, if a game crashes on the PS4 consistently, I feel pretty comfortable being like, stupid, PS4 is broken. Whereas if a game crashes on my PC consistently, I can take one step online and there's 1,000 people like, well, did you install this driver? Did you do this? Did you overclock this? Did you underclock that? Did you overclamp this? Did you neon struck this? And it's like,
did you neon struck?
I got it to work on my machine just fine.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, the problem must be you.
Yeah, give it the clamps.
What's really weird is that, like, I hear all these horror stories about people who have all these problems with PCs just not playing this or that game. I've only had that happen once with Shadow of Mordor, and I just didn't feel like fucking with it, so I just returned it and was like, whatever. Yeah. And I didn't have enough of an emotional investment in playing that particular game that I felt like I needed to jack with it. But, like, you know, I'm like, okay. Like, I haven't had any issues with stuff not working on my machine, so I don't know.
That's for weird. A man who's had a ghetto PC for like the majority of his life, I can totally relate.
Yeah.
Like struggling to get through not Inside, but the game, struggling to get through Limbo. Yeah, I can feel the pain.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, like, I use my PC for work and I also use it for art. So, like, I have a machine that's pretty decent, and you know, I'm going to keep it upgraded anyway because I'm using it for various things. Like, I use my PC for like damn near everything. So, mm-hmm. you know, whereas my TV, I rarely ever turn on, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, that's,
it's that variability.
Yeah. It's, well, in my case, it's just like a matter of convenience. Like, I'm not going to pay several hundred dollars to get a machine that does the same thing my PC already does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's kind of stupid to me. Like, there's not a point for me to do that when I already have something that does the same thing. So, you know, like, the only, you know, exception to that is, of course, like with the Vita, because that's a portable device, whereas my PC is not so portable. So,
right. Derek's response reminds me of a funny thing that I heard on the Video Games Hot Dog podcast. Kevin, one of the co-hosts there, were just like, this is like several years ago, around the time that like Binding of Isaac was really a really huge thing, like the original Flash version. They were all, I think they did it as an assignment, or, you know, just for some reason all of them were playing it. And Kevin was like, yeah, I don't understand why people think this game is really hard. Like, I got to the end boss in one go, and I was like, well, come to find out, because of some weird vagary in the machine that he was playing on, it was running at half speed. And it just felt normal, and it's like, wow, this is a really slow game, which makes it feel pretty easy. It'd probably be hard if it was twice as fast. Like, yeah. So and that reflects my experiences with some of this stuff as well. Let's see here. Dennis,
I'm up. Yeah,
what does Steven say?
Just gonna try to throw you a bone there. Steven says, I grew up playing consoles, so that's where I prefer to play. Frame rate and graphical issues have never bothered me too much, so buying a PC and risking a game just not working... cough, marketing.
No, Arkham Knight, not marketing.
Oh, marketing, I read that marketing. Night.
Yeah, marketing night. What are the KPIs? My God.
You know what's awesome is that when I first saw it, I just saw Ham Knight. I was like, what?
Time to rattle the paradigms.
Continue, Dennis. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. So it isn't particularly worth it to me. Plus, trophies rule. Counterpoint, Steam has trophies, and you can sell them for real money when you earn them.
You can sell them for 4 cents, which doesn't count, which does not pay for the calories required for you to click those buttons.
Well, you know what? I actually bought indie games because of all the trading cards and crap that I get that I just sell off on Steam.
Oh,
I bought various indie games as a result. So
I've gotten at least 2 games worth of trading cards.
Yeah, you can just, if you sell that crap off, you just wait long enough and you get enough money tallied up in there and you're good.
So I'm curious, y'all, do you set it just at market price or do you go a bit above or below? What's your strategy?
I usually do it, like, it depends on how much it looks like it's been selling or whatever, and what that price is. Like, if it's really, really low, then I just put it at whatever, you know, it's currently at, just to get rid of it, because obviously if it's a low price, it's not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna get very much out of that. What, am I gonna fight other people for one penny? No, it's fine. You know, but if it's more expensive, then I might just put it like a little bit above or something like that. But
I'm sure there's some like third party service that does this, but what I want is some kind of like clearinghouse or arbitrage where, like, instead of dealing with the market, I can just press a button and it just goes into like one big bucket and I just like sell it at like a 20% loss, because like if it's found money anyway, I don't care that I'm only getting 4 cents instead of five. Like dealing with setting the price, you know, for something that falls under that threshold just feels like way too much of a bother to me. And so I'm sitting on an inventory that is just chock full of cards.
Well, here's the thing.
You should use my theory on it, which I've never had something sit in my inventory for more than a week once I've put it up, but I religiously just go 2 cents above what it says the average price is, and it's always gone before a week is up.
Huh. Yeah. And, because I talk to people, like I'll be chatting with people and, you know, not playing a game because I'm chatting with people, so I'm just kind of sitting in my PC anyway, so I have time to like go and sell off cards or whatever while I'm talking to people.
Yeah,
so that works too. Multitasking.
I have so many other things I could multitask around.
Yeah. That's true.
Not to sound above it all.
You are above it all, Cole. No, it is just fine.
Jeez. I think that's going to be it. We've gone about 20 minutes on these. Thank you everybody for writing in. Let's get our responses. Ben, as somebody who just recently acquired a gaming PC, but also, you know, still has like console stuff, what's your gut on this? Like what makes you choose one over the other now that you have the option of both?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the kind of general consensus where I think it's very game dependent, where it's like, if it's a shooter, it's very much better if it's on the PC just for the control ease, but then if it's something more cinematic or more pretty or kind of like a movie version of a game, I would rather play that on a console just because it's on a TV screen, it would be bigger. So
yeah,
that's basically what it comes down to. So
yeah. Cool. I don't disagree with that. Jella, I feel like we've gotten your response kind of trickled in throughout, but do you have any like final definitive thing that like makes you gravitate from one to the other?
Well, see, I used to have people come over and hang out and play games and co-op and stuff. And for stuff like that, I have to go with what Amanda's saying, where she's like, I don't want to be isolated on a PC. It's really hard to do like co-op gaming around a PC with people over. But I don't really have people over anymore. Like I live with my disabled parents and help them remodel their house. Like I don't have parties at my house or anything right. anymore. So, you know, that being the case, like it's totally, I'm almost all PC except for Vita because of portability reasons. But, you know, like either one is fine. I don't have like a hatred towards one or the other, but I'm also not going to plunk down money for a box that does this thing that my computer does already. So,
yeah.
you know. But also another thing is that with PC, a lot of the random shit that I like to play is random indie stuff that is usually on PC before it goes anywhere else. And sometimes it doesn't go anywhere else. It's just on PC. So I get to play those things. And I'm more likely to play random weirdo games than I am a AAA title. So, you know, that being the case, I'm lean a little bit more towards PC for that reason, too, because it has more of the kinds of things that I play. So,
yeah.
That's it.
Exclusivity is also a big deal. Dennis, you also just got a gaming PC and even bought a new piece for it so you could continue using it.
At this point, I have to say PC just out of like sunk cost fallacy. Oh, yeah. Right? No, the way I see it, there's two types of games. There's lying down on the couch games, and then there's sitting on the edge of your seat games. And so for lying down on the couch games, I want a console, specifically because then I can even turn them into lying down in your bed games if I so choose. And then for sitting on the edge of your seat games, like your Overwatches and such, I think it's better on PC.
Yeah. I think it's a matter of granularity and that's or the granularity of control that is necessary.
If they had something that could show menu font size before playing a game, that would also dictate where I want to play it.
Oh, for fuck's sake, yeah. Because
there's so many PS4 games, you just can't read a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, No Man's Sky is a little bit like that. Same Very thing with, much, with yeah. Salt and Sanctuary. Jesus Christ.
Come on, people.
Yeah, I thought we figured this out with fucking Dead Rising. you know, I think that I've, you know, kind of let my opinion trickle out here. I'm a really big fan of the, you know, treating the PC like a console. Like, I really love the Steam controller and the Steam Link for that. Like, after you get over the initial shock of dealing with a Steam controller and kind of, like, figuring out what you need to do to set it up to make, you know, most games feel comfortable for you, like, the number of things that I otherwise would have to like sit at my desk to play, you know, that has moved into my living room is kind of shocking. So like, I prefer that overall, for pretty much any kind of game except for one that like requires the either the absolute ability to, you know, to do pixel perfect control with the mouse. Or and this is a weird one, the necessity to like take notes, because I find it much easier to scribble in a notebook when I'm sitting at a desk.
Yeah
so, sure yeah and that is my own thing. The more that I can do to move that into the living room, the better. Not so much because I have people over and it's a hugely social thing, but because those seats are comfier.
That's fair.
Sounds like a weird thing to say, but like it is totally. I would much rather be slung back in my recliner, or you know.
I absolutely understand, because I have my console and my PC facing each other, as I said, and it's one chair that can go to either one.
Oh no!
So
yeah.
So I have the setup for my PC in Cole and Ben, you've seen it, is the bar table behind my main couch in the living room.
Yeah,
and those are not the most comfortable seats. And I don't usually think about it until I've been playing for, you know, an hour and suddenly realize I completely cannot feel my leg. I have put it to sleep so bad that it hurts. again, because I've been on the edge of this very hard wooden seat.
Yeah, that's like me at work, actually. Like, I have a very similar kind of thing. I sit on a very tall bar stool No, but like your setup is actually really good for like a family kind of thing, for like socializing, because like you're facing the body of the living room, so like you can, you know, if Jenna's watching something, you can watch it with her while you're doing this other thing. Like you're not locked away in an office.
No, yeah, yeah. I'm kind of
sniffle,
I'm in I'm in ideal entertainment multitasking position where I can watch the TV, watch my computer screen, watch out where Luke and Milo play. And I'm also right next to the bathroom. So this is like, this is the perfect spot.
Nice. Well, yeah, thank you everybody for contributing to that. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you want to cast your lot in with these, and we're real sorry for people that we weren't able to get to, just head over to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast in order to check out those questions when they go up on Tuesday afternoons. And if you like the page, you sometimes get alerts. Sometimes you don't, but that's just Facebook being a cock.
Yep. 3% unpaid reach. Boo.
Ugh. Gross. The grind. Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week. Jella, because you're in the time crunch, I want to throw it to you.
Okay, so I streamed a little bit more of Resident Evil 6 with Sam. It was Leon and Helena Chapter 4. Yay! So that means we only have one more chapter to go, which we're shooting to do this weekend. So, you know, if you happen to be in Slack or if you follow me on Twitter, you will see that ping whenever I actually play that with Sam. And then we will have finished Leon and Helena. Nice. Yay!
I forget. What is Helena's relation to everything? I forget what she, like, what her role is.
She was a Secret Service agent in, you know, like, around the president, and then certain things happen.
And the president gets infected with the C-virus. It happens in the first, like, 20 minutes of that campaign.
Yes, yes. But anyway, that's who she is and why she's around the president and how she ends up involved. Because, you know, Leon is being weird creeper best friend bro with the president for some reason. And I don't know why he's hanging out in the president's office. But
he rescued his daughter.
No, that was a different president.
Oh, was it? Really?
Yes,
wow. Leon just got a thing for presidents.
Yeah, he totally does. So...
He's regular Frank on
Hollywood. So are you going to do Ada's campaign after that, or?
Oh hell no, not Ada. You did that just to make me flip a table, Cole. Oh my god. I hate Ada.
Okay, so I wasn't sure if your disdain for Ada was going to be stronger than your kind of desire to have Sam see that.
Sam will see that if we get to that point and he wants to play that. But okay. Like there's other campaigns to do first. So I don't even think is Ada's even available until after you do everybody else's though? I don't remember.
That was a patch thing. Initially you had to complete everybody's. Uh-huh. But they changed it so that that it was available. Which seems weird because maybe you have to just beat one campaign. I'm going to get her there because like it wouldn't make any sense if you just played Ada first because like she is just the connective tissue between different stuff.
Yeah, and it's such a horrible, like terribly balanced. Yeah. It's just crap. Oh my god. Anyway, like part of the reason why I don't like Ada is because her campaigns are always crap. Anyway, so all right, I did that. I also finished VLR.
Virtue's Last Reward, the sequel to 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, and the prequel. Kinda to Zero Time Dilemma.
Yes.
And the tormentor of Jala for many weeks now.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Keeping Jala's
so
local
mad.
IKEA in business.
I have been so mad. I am so mad. Okay, so first off, jumping around at the latter half of the game didn't bother me as much because I didn't have to go as far back. So it wasn't like it didn't feel like I had to backtrack all the way the hell to the beginning of the game, which is how it was at first. So that was a good thing. Of course, it was a lot of like fighting against the game all the way up until that point to get to the point where it wasn't as frustrating. Mm-hmm. Exposition dumpster diving, anybody? That was bullshit. Like, oh my god, I thought the exposition was never going to end because right when I thought it was going to end, then it's like blink, another thing has appeared on the little flow chart, and now you can go over there. Blink, blink, blink. think.
You're extending beyond poor. I mean, just like all of those, like, oh, to be continued. Like those gates are opening up.
Well, it's like the end of like the Lord of the Rings. It's like, when does it end? It should have ended an hour ago. God damn it, it's still going. Why is it still going?
You can hear Jala pounding on the table.
Yes.
In a Mussolini like fashion that she is hitting this.
I'm mad. So anyway, like, okay, I play Visinoms, but here's the thing. The pacing in here is jacked. Like, I know, like, Okay.
Man, at that point I was thirsty for it. Like it was showing me what I wanted to see. Like I didn't care.
Here's the thing. Okay. If you're gonna throw gameplay elements into your Visinov, that's great. Then don't just like throw up Visinov for the last third of the goddamn game. I mean, like, come on. Like you had like a flow going where, okay, there's this part, this novel, and then there's something to do, and then there's nothing to do, and you just kind of sit for a long, long time. I mean, like, I haven't played Metal Gear Solid 4, but that sounds like what they did in that. So
Metal Gear Solid 4 was inconsistent throughout. Like, there was never a flow that they reached.
I better not play that anytime soon. I'm going to get mad. Okay, so anyway, like, the pacing as a result of all that was irritating. And then too, like, I played through and the last ending I got was like, of course, the very long one, you know, you have to unlock. Luna's was the one that I did right before that. And that just it was doing that thing that Danganronpa did where they're just telling me the shit that I already figured out. And I really wish, because this game is already bug nuts enough as it is, I really didn't want them to explain everything and underline everything that I just saw throughout all of the little skipping around bits. I wanted to just be left to kind of go, what the hell was that just happened? But then they had to underline and tell me every last detail and recap every point A to point B. Like, okay, the actual ending, the final ending, I didn't mind them doing it there. I didn't need to hear it for Luna. And I felt like that was unnecessary, and that really could have been cut a lot shorter and been a lot less underliney.
Really want you to like Luna. Like, just her ending, you know, beyond just like, what is it? Is it Sigma or Phi's ending that is like the crazy long one at the center that extends?
Phi.
It's Phi. Okay. Yeah. Sigma or Phi's ending. Yeah. There we go. Phi's ending, like, that has, like, that ties everything together. Whereas, like, shit. I was going to say something about Luna's ending, but that. Yeah. Okay. So people die in this game. They're like, the cast gets really constricted down that one particular avenue. To a point where it's just kind of like, man, there are not as many voices here as I would think, and it doesn't feel like they are covering ground that feels especially relevant to the main thrust of, like, the coolest parts of this story. Like, I can see that.
Yeah, and that's really what I was just like, this is just, I felt like that was a waste of my time because there was no way for me to skip through that part. Mm-hmm. And I was just mad about that. Now, the thing is I was thinking about it while I was sitting here scrolling through this, like, ungodly amount of just, like, tap, 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 text crap. And, like, I was trying to think, would this game be better if it was, you know, just, like, a complete, like, anime series or something like that? And really, I was like, no, because you really, part of the point is that you have to select, ally, betray, you have to go through all the puzzles and stuff. And without that empowerment of you making those decisions, then it doesn't, like, the point is, doesn't come across as well, I don't think.
Right.
So, like, you know, no, it needs to be a game, but some of this, like, okay, Phi's ending, the ultimate ending, other than the fact that it just keeps on adding and keeps on adding and keeps on adding more crap. And then it says to be continued at the end of that. I was so mad.
Okay, I didn't like the to be continued for the 3 years that it was in effect. But the way that it to be continued is pretty cool. So I'm going to put this question back to you as somebody who didn't play the version of 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors that was, you know, like a mix of the visual novel and the puzzle game, you know, and who kind of felt like the experience was diminished for it. Would you have preferred to walk into this and have it just be like, do you think that the visual novel would have been stronger if you were not just kind of like waiting to get to the fireworks factory of a room escape puzzle? Because you read and, you know, like you as yeah. you said, you enjoy a visual novel, and what it sounds like is like the inconsistency is kind of bugging you.
Well, the inconsistency was bugging me, but I don't know, because like I didn't have a fair playthrough of 999. I had only read it, so like but then again, that game was also not as convoluted and didn't have as much stuff going on.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it didn't, that game didn't really feel like, you know, the choices I was making were quite the same impact, even though they were. You know, like it seems more direct to say, are you going to ally or betray this, you know, with this person versus I'm going to pick a door or whatever, which is what was happening in the first game. So like the kind of personal implications in VLR make me feel that I need to have those choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that 999 really needs that.
So the choices wouldn't go away. You would still, you know, branch as you go there. I'm specifically talking about talking about like the room escape stuff.
Okay. I don't know. Like I would have to see it in that format to really know if that would make it a little bit smoother for me or not. But I do know that one thing that was also bothering Phil, because we have to bring up Phil at least twice every episode. Phil was bugged by the fact that they have those traversal parts where like they show you going around the map and opening up doors and crap, and you can't
boop
any
boop,
of that.
Boop,
yeah. Bing. And that gets really, really like you're just trying to get to the next part. And then too, like the parts where there's announcers and the announcer says the same thing every time, but you can't skip it every time. You have to listen to it every time.
Yeah.
Like that's irritating too. Like those are mild things that could have really been skippable.
Yeah.
And that made it less irritating.
Those are handfuls of seconds that add up to minutes. Like for something that doesn't really like my orientation within this facility doesn't matter an awful lot, actually. It doesn't matter as much as like the time that they dedicate to it.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what I'm trying to say with that. Insofar as the room escapes, I enjoy a room escape puzzle, so I don't mind that, and it didn't irritate me at any point when I got to a room escape, so I don't really know that you know, that factored into me not liking it. I think it's just like, here's a lot of stuff you can do. You get to do all this stuff and manipulate all these things and make all these decisions, and then you sit. And then, like, at the end of the game, it's just sit for a long time and, like...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then again, I think it's kind of like I had the same issue with Danganronpa when it was getting through some of those trials where it was just telling me the crap I already knew and I was just bored. It was the same thing that was happening here. Like not for the final ending, but like some of the other stuff, you know, especially in Luna's ending, like it just was telling me crap that I'm just like, I got this. I got this. Is there an option that I could like get past this part? I'm done.
The yada yada button, right?
Yeah, I want a yada yada button because I'm just like done with this now. Can I just see the end of it? No. So, and the ending is just as verifiably bug nuts. I actually think that I understand more of what's going on now than I did in 999, because at the end of 999, I'm like, what the fuck was that? Like, I don't even know.
999, like, you know, like at the, not the climax of that game, but like when everything kind of like reaches its natural conclusion. Everything like okay, like I mean there's a bunch of stuff, like there's a lot of, you know, pseudoscience mumbo jumbo, but I can kind of get down with it. I can a little bit wrap my mind around the mechanics of what's happening, and then you just get something that is like never paid off ever.
Yeah.
like that particular surprise, whereas like there are things that are revealed at the end of VLR that like I sat with and just kind of like, man, how are they going to do this? Like, how are they going to square this away? You know, I sat with that for 3 years.
Well, see, and part of the thing for me too is, as I've said before, as irritated as I've been with how the mechanics of the game are, the story is interesting enough to me that I still want to play the end of the story, just not any time soon. I need time away from it to decompress. I need to decompress and play something that makes me happy for a while before I go back to playing this series. But it's funny, playing this and going through all the misery that I did, because there was misery in there, to get to the end of it. has actually, I think, increased my tolerance level for potentially playing Danganronpa, because in playing this one, I reflected back on Danganronpa and said, you know, the gameplay in that really was, you know, like, are those tropes that are being played into so bad compared to this crap I'm dealing with right now?
Oh, God, that was loud.
I was so mad.
That's a...
Sorry, eardrums.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There's a compressor going. That's Don't worry. It's fine.
So mad. But anyway, so that was me playing this game. And the irony is that I still want to play the other one.
Yeah.
Just after I have had a long time away from it.
Take a break. Like, wait for it to go on sale or something like that.
I will tell you now, I'm probably not going to play it till 2017 because I need time.
I mean, that was a shorter turnaround than I had, you know. What I will say, though, you know, is that, like, you know, the expectation that you have is already set. But even just kind of like going into it, its structure is so novel. And it actually does feel like it is, like, they're institutionalizing a lot of the jumping around stuff that seemed to bother you so much and fragmenting it even further to where, like, it really, you know, like, it is very intentionally giving you scenelets that you're not playing into a line. So you're never really doing anything where you're, like, playing through from the beginning again. You don't have that slog where it's like, well, I'm back to the fucking beginning. Like, it is straight up, like, you know, just scene after scene after scene after scene. And then it's only connected, you know, like, you know, much, much later on in the story without you having to walk over that ground again.
Yeah, the fragmentation itself isn't a problem for me. I think it's just, like, having to, like, feeling like I backtrack all the way and I have to go through all of this whole line, like, looking at the flow chart and going, oh, I've got how much longer to get to the end of one, potentially get to maybe an ending, you know? And that kind of sensation is really the thing that irritated me the most, I think, with it.
Don't get me wrong, there's still a little bit of it, and there is, like, a flow chart, so you do end up saying, like, okay, well, I got this one little bit that's about three quarters of the way through, you know, and it does do that thing where it extends it as it goes along. Like, that is a trick that this does, you know, where it takes you beyond the map. Like, you know, the stuff that you're talking about is still there. However, you know, it feels like I'm bullying you into, like, saying you technically like this game or, like, trying to goad into playing something that you won't.
Well, first off, Cole, you can't bully me.
Okay. I hit back.
I hit the table all the time. I'm not afraid of you, Cole. But anyway, I said it before. I said it in the other episode. I've been trying to say it all along. As much as I've been mad, like, there's a reason I've been playing it. I've played it because I'm interested in some of the aspects of it. Some of it is very frustrating. But, I mean, like, that, how has that stopped anybody over the years from, you know, going through and playing it, going, oh, God, that part's so hard, or whatever it is that's frustrating them about whatever game they're playing, you know? I mean, like, it's just part of the experience, you know. It's been a while since a game has made me this mad. I mean, I thought Danganronpa had hit the roof.
I think the floor.
Yeah, hit the floor because I was about to throw it. But anyway, I think VLR got me probably as angry as I've ever been about a video game. I think has made me as angry as I've ever been. So,
a glowing recommendation.
The thing is, again, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I know that my particular issues with the skipping around and whatever is just, like, intrinsic to me. It's not necessarily indicative of somebody else's experience. Like, there are people who like that and think that's cool. I don't know what's up with that, but, you know, they're whatever, different strokes for different folks, you know, that's cool. If you dig it, good job. I will get mad watching you play it. You know, like, I can't even watch somebody play that because I'll flip a table. So, like, you know, that's the end of that. But yes, I will eventually play Zero Time Dilemma in the future somewhere. And I may possibly play Danganronpa 2 at some time in the future, but it's going to be some time. I need to heal.
Yeah, I think you need to play something that's not a visual novel.
I am going to be playing other things.
Yeah, play like a fucking platinum game or something. Like, get this out of your system.
Well, I do have the Transformers Devastation game floating around on my Steam. Of course, the thing is that I've got like a ton of games on Steam that I have downloaded and ready to play. So I can sit here and say, I'm going to play Transformers Devastation. And then I get there. And then what do? I play some really random, obscure indie game that I didn't even realize that I had, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, hey, what's this? Click. Okay.
It's the road we're all cursed to walk.
Yeah. So I don't know what's coming up next, but it will be something of my own choosing that is not this, but I finished this.
Who was twisting your arm, Jala? Who twisted your arm?
You people and you talking about your damn...
I never said Jala.
You just said we couldn't affect you.
Yeah.
I know. No, it's the invisible pressure. It's the, okay, I'm curious about it because you guys spend so much damn time talking about it. I need to see it at least and see how this is. And then...
And again, but, this doesn't make me feel any better. I still feel implicit.
This is your fault, Cole. No, no. When I played 999, I played it just because I was curious, because I was like, okay, that's a game that sounds interesting to me. I want to try it out, you know. And I still think, like, overall, I prefer 999 to VLR. And I still, by the way, about the characters, I still don't really give a crap about any of the characters. I played the entire thing and I'm like, all right, I still don't have any attachment to anybody, as much as they were trying to force Luna on me. And so whatever.
Yeah.
Although like the story in VLR, like it makes more sense and, is interesting in weirdo pseudoscience ways. You know, so I'm curious to see what they do with it next, and that is why I will suffer through the rest of it that gets me there, the vehicle that gets me there after a healing time.
Yeah.
Or a cup break. So.
Huh. Well, anything else?
Nope. That is the only thing I have played. I was determined to finish it so I could move on.
Well, for your sake, I'm happy you're moving on.
I'm happy I'm moving on. I will play something else and it will be fun, and then I'll be happy next week.
The Jala rage has ended.
Yes, the Jala rage is over.
Our national nightmare is over.
For now. I actually had a listener tell me that they were scared. So I'm sorry. I probably really made you scared because I just beat on the table like twice. Yeah,
I've got a low pass filter going on this, so like most of that was taken out. Don't worry about it; it's fine.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, I got you.
I don't want to inspire terror in the hearts of.
Well, good. Then I'm going to resort to screaming for the rest of this episode.
No, don't do that. It's a low pass filter. Oh man!
Resort to bellowing.
Oh man. So Jala, if that is all, do you want to take this opportunity to make your exit? And I'm not pushing you away. I just want you to know that since you are operating with a time limit, now is a time.
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and head out because I have to wake up extremely early and I am extremely tired.
Yes.
It will not be like this forever. It's just these last 2 weeks. The next week it'll be back to normal. So I'm no biggie.
I'm positive people understand. So yeah. If people wanted to find you somewhere on the internet, where would they go?
They would find me anywhere on internet. Jala-chan.
There we go.
Jala-chan or Neon Sky Studio. One of those. Most of the time.
And there you go. Now that Jala's gone, we should probably move on to our grind games. So all three of us have one in common. I want to get the ones that we do not have in common out of the way. So Dennis, have you played anything that is not No Man's Sky?
Yeah, and I have a question for you. How the hell did you keep it a secret for 2.5 years that there is a character with my name in Dark Souls 2? Holy crap!
I didn't want to ruin it for you.
I appreciate it. It was an amazing moment when it happened. I just don't understand how you were able to do that.
First and last day? No. So there's an NPC invader, one of the guys, specifically Scholar of the First Sin, named Armorer Dentist. No, that's the name of the Duckfeed Live episode that is named after it. No, it's Armorer Dennis, and it's got the two ends and everything. And he invades you at several different points, actually. He's a really fun fight. He's kind of like a little spell sword kind of thing. And it's kind of one of the kind of recurring gags around that game. It's kind of like, oh, you know, Dennis is back, yay! It never came up. Like it never got to the point where your potential delight at hearing like, oh, there's a character that I share a name with, that your potential delight in that would outweigh. Just either how out of left field it would come or how much you would like just kind of encountering that in the wild.
Yeah, discovering it on my own. Well, it was made all the more surreal by the way I discovered it, because right before, literally like, you know, the night before I played the area where you encounter him first, I had been posting on the Slack and someone had been like, oh, I'm going to create a character to co-op with you. I'll probably call it like I'll do like a healer and I'll call it Armor O'Dennis, which I realize in retrospect was like a pun on Armor Dennis's name. Mm-hmm. But I thought they were just being funny about like, oh, I'm going to be your armor, whatever. Like it just bounced right off me. But this person had told me they were going to create a character using my name and were going to be in the game with me. I had posted that the night that I found Armor O'Dennis. That I was going to stream this and, you know, so people join me.
That the NPC invasion was the person coming for help.
Yeah, I think it was my. And so what I thought was like, oh, hi, you know, like saying hi, they're going to invade me first and then we'll go off and, you know, play together. And then they did it again. And then they did it again.
And they got a message saying like, hey, dude, where are you at?
So like I'm like, all right, you know, first three or so times I'm just like having fun with it. I'm like, you know, this is just fun to, it was the first time I'd been invaded in the playthrough, so I was having fun with it. But then it got to the point where I was like, okay, seriously, this isn't funny, let's get on with this. and it got like this is the thing that blows my mind. I was like, all right, let's, like, I wasn't gonna go to the trouble of like looking up this person because I didn't know if we were friends in the network yet or whatever. In my mind, it was like, okay, this has been out forever. There's a chance that if they're streaming, they can see exactly where I am and kind of know what soul level I'm at. And that happen to have a character that can get there. They can kind of repeatedly invade me. Maybe I'm like the only one who's playing this area right now, which probably is not even close to accurate in real life. But that was just what kept me from realizing, oh, this is an NPC faster. But I went to the top of this ramp and I just stood there and waited for them.
Which right? area was this? This is not Iron Keep. This is somewhere else, right?
No, this is the Forest of Giants.
Okay.
Or what the actual name is. And it is the new, or not the new bonfire. It's the bonfire that is, as you're going through into the first area with the tree and you can drop down and find the map obsessed guy right yeah. before that, there's a door that you can unlock, go through a skeleton tunnel, and there's an area back there
as you do,
which I actually had not explored in the vanilla game.
Hmm.
There's a bonfire back there. I'm forgetting the name of it off the top of my head. but at any rate, so I just was like, all right, I'll just stand still and show this person like, okay, I'm done dueling. Let's get on with the game. And the NPC that I thought was a real person walks up, kind of stands there for a second, and then does a freaking emote at me, the like, I'm coming for you.
So you still think it's an actual person?
I that cemented in my mind that this is like, I wasn't doubting beforehand, but like, that's exactly what I would have expected a person to do. Mm-hmm. So I wound up quitting the game for that and be like, all right, I'm done with this. I'm going to come to it later, going and playing something else. And only the next morning when I woke up, I woke up with a thought in my mind of like, that person was really consistently able to invade you. And then I logged into the game again, and sure enough, there they were. And at that point, I was like, oh my God.
There was like a little saw montage while Lux Eterna played, all the pieces connected.
You know, but then I went from here's this person trolling me to there's a character that has my name in the game, and that is fantastic. So, that just, yeah, how cool is that? That's the most important thing that I've done in Dark Souls 2. Nothing else really matters so far. I have not beat Armor or Dennis yet, though. I went to a different area. I could probably go back now. I've leveled up quite a bit and take it to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I have beaten every boss I've played. I have beaten on the first try.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the bosses don't change appreciably, so you still probably have some muscle memory.
Except for the Pursuer. The Pursuer got me a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
Every other boss has fallen on the first try, and I've done Dragon Rider. I've obviously done the Giant, and I've done the Skeleton King.
Yeah.
Or Kings, I guess.
Mm, yeah, Skeleton onward. Lords.
Lords, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm at that point where I haven't played it long enough that I remember like half of all the names. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to the Hunter's Copse and
the Bone Regents. Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Bone Reagents, which you need to cast certain spells.
Well, yeah, those are important.
Yeah.
I'm still doing the Hex build. I've gotten the Sunset Staff.
Oh shit.
Yeah. And I am working my way to unlock the Crypt Black Sword or something like that.
You've got to Bonfire Ascetic, the Rotten, in order to get that.
Yep.
That's a really good sword.
I can't figure out, like, I could try to buy, I'm not sure what would be more efficient, just playing through to get the guy who drops the ladder for you, or saving up and buying the ring that reduces fall damage.
It's worth having that ring otherwise.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a nice to have.
Okay. Maybe I'll do it that way then. I've been going with the thought of like, well, it's fun to play the game, so I'll unlock this by playing the game then versus trying to farm souls. But
if it gets something that's good for your build, like there's really not a reason not to do that.
Yeah.
It's also not an awful lot of souls in the long run, too. So
I am getting to the point where it's like 2.5 soul levels.
Yeah.
So that might be the way I go. But continuing to enjoy that. And I'm curious to, like, I never really did New Game Plus stuff with the vanilla game.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard people say that there's a lot there. So I'm balancing like how much I want to just like camp out on Dark Souls 2, do all the DLC, do a bunch of New Game Plus stuff just to see it, or how much I really just want to sprint through and get caught up.
It depends on what you call a lot. I would actually say it might be benefit you to like put some time between you, because there is enough new stuff there, mostly on the order of like new NPC invasions, new mm-hmm. item placements and stuff like that. Like it would be good to have your memory of the game kind of fade a little bit by playing another Souls game, or you know, playing something else from another series, so that those can be genuine surprises again for you when they come back, so it doesn't stick out. It's not as big as vanilla Dark Souls 2 to Scholar, but it's something that is akin to that.
Yeah, cool. So that is me, and then I've been playing No Man's Sky, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. Ben, anything besides No Man's Sky?
Rocket League.
Oh yeah. Anything new in Rocket League? Or you just say Rocket League to say you play Rocket League?
I play Rocket League. I'm at 265 hours, you know, more holy aerials, shit, wow, all that stuff.
More aerials. So is your aerial game getting more on point? Like what's is there a concerted and mindful way that you actually like practice that?
No, but I think over like long period of time, it's slowly getting better. But the best aerial game I had is one day when I was like very hungover. For some reason, I was very good at aerials that day. But
it probably adjusted your reactions enough in one direction that it hit the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's all. I don't know. I don't have anything to say about Rocket League that has not been said many times. Yeah. So yeah.
So I'll do my non-No Man's Sky game, and that is a game for PC, Steam, whatever, called RimWorld.
So okay.
I was home over the weekend. I intended to bring my mouse so I could play some Team Fortress 2. Didn't happen. I brought the wrong mouse. So I ended up wanting to play something that was a little bit less action-intensive. And I've been hearing really good things about this RimWorld game, you know, kind of calling it a less depressing prison architect, and that is actually really accurate. It looks and plays very similarly to Prison Architect, but like this is kind of a you know, similar to that in that it is a reskinning of an updating of Dwarf Fortress, which I have attempted but just cannot break. And yeah, I mean, I know that like, oh, there are interface mods, but like this is a really good experience for me now with this game, so it's fine. It is the kind of game where like I'm happy I played as much of it as I did, you know, just like a couple of, you know, several hour long binges of it. in order to talk about on the show. Like, there is a definite, like, you are like the default scenario is you are you're playing as like these three survivors who have crashed on this planet and are trying to set up a colony and survive under these, you know, terrible odds. Like one of the ends of the tech tree is like to build a new spaceship to get off of it. Like, there's a definite end, but otherwise, this is a game that I'm kind of terrified is on my machine, because it is like a SimCity or a Sims or something like that. There is always something new just beyond this, and even more kind of insidiously, you're not really like issuing individual commands to people. Like, you can get down there and do that, but you're making like broad kind of like declarations of like, I want you guys to mine this, or I want you guys to clear this brush, or I want you guys to build this, you know, to build this barracks or store this stuff here. And you set priorities for your individual people, and they just kind of go around and do it, you know, as it gets around. And so you're like kind of like adjusting these faders and watching the way the system reacts over time, which is incredibly dangerous, because it is exactly the kind of management game that I just immediately fall head over heels in love with. And so like, I was talking off the air about like, oh, I didn't get as much done today as I wanted to. And that's because I woke up and I was like, I wonder if I can like mine out and make like a living space for my dudes in RimWorld. And, you know, like I lost like 3 hours today to doing that. And it's like, no, that's not how I'm supposed to spend a Tuesday. Come on. You know, but it's like, you know, I've had a couple of failed colonies, just like I had a couple of failed prisons in like prison archetype, like recently something terrible happened. Your characters, like your individual little colonists, have like a mood meter, like you would expect, but there are also points at which they have mental breaks, right? And okay. If the mood gets low enough, one of the breaks that they have, instead of just like, hey, I need to go and be in a room for a while, or like they go off into the wilderness, is just like straight up go berserk. So my
Hulk out.
Yeah. And so my best hunter, the one who is equipped with the best gun, decided, the breaking factor, their breaking point was they had to eat without a table. And like that is that contributes like a negative
monster
mood. Yeah, I know, right? It's so trivial, because like, you know, it's listed along there with like, watched my friend die or something like that, and it's like just like the smallest little thing, like I had to eat over the sink like a goddamn animal. And then he went like full on like, go, you know, Private Gomer Pyle, and just like did enough damage that it's like I didn't even realize tables were a factor in this. So it's like I could probably reload an earlier save, but it makes more sense just to, you know, kind of roll up a new colony, because I know more now, like, and I'm not going to sunk cost fallacy this and get beyond it. The second person and the second colony who went berserk, it was because they were again, things were kind of lean. I hadn't gotten the farming up to where it was supposed to be. The moods were kind of down. Somebody had just died of illness, whatever. People have different tolerances for like ugly spaces around them, and one of the people that I have set to be really, you know, one of the people who's really good at mining also is like really finicky about their environment. And so I had them going in, and I was having them cut like long lines down this big long thing, so I could do like a almost like a core sample, so I could see where I needed to get you know, the resources that I needed to make the kind of stuff that I needed. And it was in there, and mines are incredibly ugly, right? Like if you look at the stats for a particular room, it's like, oh, this is a hideous room. Well, yeah, because it's a dusty mine and it's dark and it's cramped and all of that.
It's incredible that there are stats for the thing's aesthetic value.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, just like, it just, everything has this. Like, you can look at the history of a person's wounds. It doesn't just tell you like which part of them specifically is wounded, like, oh, there's a bruise on the left ear. It will tell you you know,
how this, they were emotionally wounded in battle.
not quite that, but it's like it will tell you like, okay, so this is a bruise on their left ear from like an ibis like ram's right hoof or something like that.
Oh wow.
It's like whoa, like it's down to that. It's keeping track of a tremendous amount of stuff. But this person went crazy in this maze of mines, and I'm like, well, they're also really good with weapons, and I kind of want to see how this plays out. Will they get out on their own? Will they get hungry enough to like calm down, because that can happen as well. But they just like them being stuck in the mine meant that their mood would never go back up. And by the time they actually like got out, they were crazy enough to run at the nearest animal and try and attack it so they could eat it. But they were still berserk. And also they weren't really that well armed enough, and they were weakened to where they, you know, basically starved themselves and halfway to death in this mine, walked out, attacked an animal while berserk, and then got killed by that animal.
Aww. That sounds like the problem solved itself.
But then I had to deal with like the pall that was cast over the colony, as I had to bury the second dead founder in that season.
Huh.
So like, this is a game that I would love to stream, and I want to stream it because like me continuing to play this just means that like, ah, man, it's a hole I can fall down forever. So I would absolutely need to do this in a way that like contributed to some kind of content, because otherwise like this is what a depression game feels like. I'm not particularly depressed, but like that's what it is.
Sure.
Yeah. But RimWorld, so good. it's early release or early access or whatever. It was like a Kickstarter a couple years ago. People on other podcasts are talking about it like it's feature complete. It feels pretty feature complete to me. It's not like Prison mm-hmm. Architect, where it's like we're on alpha 13 of an independent or of an indeterminate number of them. Like this feels like there's plenty to do and there are no systems that are obviously incomplete. But yeah, it kicks copious amounts of ass.
Huh.
Very cool.
Any questions about RimWorld?
Are there any stats more obscure than the ones that you've already mentioned that they track?
Well, that's pretty obscure.
Like ugliness of a cave wall is pretty obscure.
Yeah, and it'll even like update like as you are like mousing over different areas. You can turn on like the view of a certain place, and it'll say like, you know, this room feels pretty cramped. It tracks cleanliness as opposed to like the richness of an area, as opposed to the aesthetic appeal of an area.
Interesting.
Yeah. And on down to just, you know, different skills and like what that translates to with the work orders that you can give via the priorities, stuff like that. Yeah, it is a very complex game, and I do not like list complexity as like a be all end all of like, hey, this is absolutely a positive thing. Like usually simpler is better. However, this does end up being it works pretty well.
Benefits from the complexity.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, just like you're going to have to like consign yourself to or resign yourself rather to failing at a colony a handful of times like I did, you know, just like that is the way that you learn about this. So you can't be too terribly upset about it. But it does reveal itself the way that it kind of like categorizes this, and the way that you can select your difficulty or what kind of game you play is you don't just select like a difficulty, you select like an AI storyteller. So like there are some, it's kind of like picking how you want to pay back your student loan. Like there are some that like ramp up the difficulty of like the random kind of disasters that come up as you go along to tell like this story of increasing adversity that rises as you kind of like get more settled in. There are some that are kind of like incredibly random. There are some where like that stuff is kind of kept to a minimum, and then within those you can be like, okay, I want to build a base, or I want to have this be free play, or I want this to give me everything that it has. So it's incredibly granular what kind of experience you want to roll up.
This sounds like an awesome game.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
It's really cool. Also kind of expensive if $30 for an early access game scares you away. However, like even just with the, you know, the time that I put into it, I feel like it has spoken volumes for its value. Yeah. So let's talk about No Man's Sky.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So we all got this for PS4.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Good talk.
That's really all there is to say.
My name's Cole Ross.
I feel like we need to put some structure on this. Like, how are we even going to go about talking about it?
I don't know. Okay. So, how many hours have each of us played of the game?
Oh, probably only like four.
couldn't tell you how many hours I put into it, but I just, not just, but like I warped to my second cluster or whatever. Like I just recently unlocked the ability to do like FTL travel.
Gotcha. Okay. Dennis, have you done FTL travel?
I have not.
Okay. I have warped like probably 15 to 20 times. So
so this is very interesting. I was talking on the No Ducks Sky channel on the Slack. I apparently do way more derping around in this game than anyone else. Like the game for me in large part, probably the first two of those 4 hours was like hiking simulator. I was just kind of wandering around. Just, ooh, that's a high peak. I wonder if I could climb that. Is that a cave or is it just a hole?
As opposed to my first 2 hours, which were testing the limits of how I could piss off the Sentinel simulator.
They do not like that.
Ooh, yeah. No, they do not.
Okay.
So let's describe our homeworlds, maybe. What did your homeworlds look like?
I got homeworld. Like the one I crash landed on?
Yeah, the very first world for you.
That was incredibly incredibly radioactive. So the, like, really? Like hostily radioactive, actually. Like it just, I was like, oh, so I just like constantly have two life meters that are always going down that I have to manage.
Mm-hmm. Mine was also semi radioactive, perhaps not hostily radioactive, but yeah.
Interesting. Mine was incredibly friendly. It got a little chilly at night, but it never did enough to actually do any damage to me. It was like kind of rocky, deserty type terrain with lots and lots of canyons. Not necessarily cave systems, although there were some, but very canyony.
God, I love a canyon, or I love a cave system.
I love them until I started getting lost in them, and then I love them a little bit less, but. Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys done any caving? Have you done spelunking?
I mean, I've walked around inside of caves, but I don't know that I've done anything that is like a different verb set.
Okay. Yeah, that's basically all I'm asking.
None of my cave systems were deep enough to really be like at no point was I in a cave where I could not see the exit to the cave. And that was either because it was just too shallow or there were multiple exits everywhere. So there might be another cave system under the surface of this world that I'm not getting to, but like I said, very friendly place in general.
Yeah. The nice part is you never end up going too terribly deep. I'm sorry, Dennis, I interrupted you.
No, you're fine. I choked on my own spit at there. So it's good that you stepped in. I also discovered, there were lots of like kind of squirrel variants on the planet. And one of them was literally like a squirrel with a pyramid head. Straight out of Silent Hill.
Silent squirrel.
Like I uploaded a picture of it to Slack, but it's like it is a pyramid head squirrel. It's just what it is.
How did it move?
Like a squirrel. I want to say, trying to back into what might have created this. I think it's just like a really large, overpowering beak on it. But there's no visible head for the beak to go on. It's just. Like a neck and then a giant triangular beak that looks like a pyramid head. So
kind of like you can look at a picture of a toucan and be like, oh, it's a bird with a big ass beak. You look at a video of a toucan, it's like, what's happening with this? This doesn't make any sense. That's way too much beak for that size of animal.
Yeah, this puts toucans to shame.
Fuck you, toucans. Work harder. Yeah.
Toucans, more like toucans.
More like two won't. Yeah.
Okay. So, Dennis, it sounds like you're taking the naturalist perspective of this game, or that strategy of the game. Did you find all the animals on your homeworld then?
I did, but I did it without specifically looking for new wildlife. I just kind of scanned stuff as it wandered past me and eventually got to the 7 different species of animal that were on the world. As I was doing my own exploring. The other thing of note, there was a piece of, what is it, flora or fauna? Flora, plant?
Yeah, flora.
Yeah, a piece of flora that was like a cattail-like plant, except it would whip you with electricity when you got too close to it. And this leads into how much I play this game while I'm not playing it. I was thinking about what should I call that when I was working out the other day. I think I've landed on S&M, so E-S-E-N, or E-S-E-S-U-N-E-M.
Yeah.
S&M.
I would have called it Cato One Tails.
That's pretty good. But the first couple times I ran into that, I just, for whatever reason, kind of backed into it or did not see it actually hit me. Mm-hmm. And so I would just hear this like, and I lose health. And I'm like, what the hell? What? Who? Where? What? And then like it took me 3 or 4 times before I realized that it was this like plant doing it to me.
Because taking damage in this game is actually really rare. Like it's a pretty jarring experience, at least it has been for me, when I have not like intentionally pissed off the Sentinels, you know, once again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I was like, is there like a sniper on the hill somewhere? What the hell is going on?
Yeah. I had a very kind of tense moment where I was I'm still kind of in a dinky starting ship. Like I have no confidence in my ability to do any kind of real like dogfighting, even though I would really want to, because that is a fun kind of game. I was leaving a planet and some pirates had gotten to me, and it's like, oh boy, I can't go into warp or whatever, the jump drive or toggle throttle or whatever it is. There's a space station nearby. I wonder if I can just like jog as fast as I can there in my ship. And like I had like one little like hull integrity thing left as I like breached the lip of it and like got inside and like calmed down. And I think that's where my ship still is, actually. Like I don't know if that repairs over time or if I need to like wheel and deal for something that'll kind of repair it. Like very little of this game is actually explained, which is to its benefit, but like I feel like there are things that it is trying to tell me but very ineffectively, as its kind of interface kind of doesn't know what it feels like. It is not prioritizing the kind of information that is like really useful to me at any given moment, and that's probably just me needing to kind of like catch up to it. But like that has been a little bit of a problem for me, is like discoverability of like even the basic loop, or not the basic loop because there are several ones, but like the possible basic loops that this game could, you know, kind of like follow. Right.
Yeah, it's definitely a game that benefits from playing with like a guide in hand or like a wiki in hand.
Yeah,
I would say some of the things that they don't explain go to its detriment, like the Atlas path, for example. Mm-hmm. I do not think that is a good game design decision, where it's a binary decision that they do not explain on the very first planet that's easy to miss that determines how the rest of the game plays for you. Seems like a bad idea.
Is there any downside to like to taking the Atlas thing? Because like I want guidance, right? Or I want a guidance when I pick that up. But like, can you just walk away from that at any time?
I did not accept it because I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I realized what it did, I was too far beyond that. But it's one of those things where it's like there was no explanation for what it was or what ramifications it would have. I mean, apparently you can still get Atlas passes without having to accepted that path, but that seems kind of like it's just a weird design decision.
I wonder if you'll see the red floaty thing again and get a chance to opt in again.
It seems like that should be something that is like at other kind of similar crash sites, or like, you know, the main thing that I've been doing in this game is actually like doing very low passes over planets and doing scans and trying to find as many like man-made structures as I can, you know, either crash sites or beacons and stuff like that, because like that has been kind of the most fruitful way. Like it seems like interesting stuff populates around those, and any given planet is way too big for you to ever exhaust what's there, let alone on foot. So that is
speak
the way
for yourself.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying.
I'll probably say the same thing that he says. You can speak for both of us, Cole.
Yeah. But yeah, it's I don't know. I could do with more kind of guidance. It's neat that when it does kind of like present you with explanatory text, it's done in character. It's, you know, like in the voice of, you know, your incredibly eloquent space man. You know, but yeah, like just not realizing you missed a boat that would give you like incredibly basic stuff, which is like, okay, you need to get off this planet. Here's how you could possibly do that. you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting that they don't explain any of like the resource and like how to upgrade mechanics, and they let you just kind of figure that out on your own.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like that aspect a little bit. And I thought that was fun for the first planet. Maybe we should talk about like the mid game. What, like, after you figure out the base mechanics of like mining for materials, selling them, and like getting more money and then buying things to upgrade your either spacesuit, weapon, or ship, what is there besides that in this game?
They're seeing if you can climb that hill over there.
For me, there is...
And that is, I want to clarify, because that sounded like it came out sarcastic. That is not a derogatory statement at all.
No.
Like I said, this scratches a very specific itch that I love.
Yeah. I mean, and my answer is going to be very similar to yours, just on a different scale. Like, you know, looking at this planet and saying, yeah, this is a cool, weird, lonely, emphasis on lonely biome. I want to go to the next one and see what that one's like, and see if there's anything new there to see. So as opposed to like what will getting on top of that hill show me, it's like, well, I can go anywhere, so like I'm just going to see like there's always another planet in view, and I can always like gather enough materials. Like the first thing I do when, you know, that I've done when I've gotten to a new place is like gather up enough of anything or trade or buy what I need to give myself the resources that I need to jump away. But like if I can planet hop and see cool, interesting stuff, I mean, yeah, the novelty is going to go away, because even though there are infinite combinations, it's infinite combinations of a finite number of parts. You know, and that'll be a bummer, but that hasn't happened yet. So like for now, the desire to see more, and also the desire to like kind of game the economy, and also kind of like learn different vocabulary words has kind of like ushered me forward.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't get me wrong, I'm going to play this game after we're done recording this episode. But my one criticism of the game is the game is just one long grind so far. It does not show you any sort of pacing towards how much progress you have made in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no idea how far I am in the game, you know? And that is my, I think, one complaint with the game, is that it seems like there's some information that they should convey to you, and that they do not do that at all.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
My other gripe with the game is like a lot of the progression is randomized. So like getting like recipes for certain things, or like getting unlocks for certain things, is dependent upon an RNG. And I don't like that aspect at all either, because there's no strategy I can make to try and progress myself in this game. It's whether or not the game wants to give me this upgrade whether or not I'll get it.
Mm-hmm. And that sucks, because like in the absence of something big that you're kind of grinding or working toward, those little kind of like minor carrots or sticks, like, you know, like, oh, I'm mining pretty slow, I recognize that there's the ability for that to happen. Like the fact that there's very little you can do to influence, like especially like a new ship, like I've not gotten to a place where I feel like I can exert any control over whether or not I can, you know, get a new ship.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bummer.
Just start mining gold, dude.
For some of the upgrades and ship pieces, I'm with you. To your first point, though, I think that in large part, what this game is about is being in this vast world that does not need you and is not necessarily designed for you.
Mm-hmm.
And just feeling that incredible smallness and lostness and ability to explore, you know, you're not going to have a meaningful impact on this universe. It you know, it runs on its own algorithm, and, you know, it's just fine without you.
Yeah.
And that's very freeing to me to just, as I phrased before, just derp around, to like, just go and wonder, and that is frustrating if you are looking to progress. Or I think if you were looking to quote unquote finish the game for a review, maybe we will, maybe we won't get into that. Mm-hmm. But I think if you come to it as I want to be somewhere beautiful while I fall asleep, this is incredible for that.
Yeah. It is an incredibly pretty game, and I think that like it is drenched in atmosphere, at least so far. Like, you know, this is I don't know. Like, I'm always kind of chasing the mist dragon a little bit. Not the mist dragon that you fight at the beginning of Final Fantasy IV, but like just that sense of being kind of like alone in an alien and, you know, hostile place that you got when you went into certain parts of, you know, Myst, the 90s adventure game. You know, like all of that, you know, I get that same feeling here. Like setting down on a planet and just kind of like, okay, I'm just going to see a bunch of cool stuff and just kind of encounter this place on its own terms.
It feels kind of akin to Mass Effect, some of the planetary I guess it was Mass Effect 1, maybe.
Yeah, with like the Mako stuff.
Yeah.
How so? I didn't play that game.
I would also say, like, Dennis, I completely agree with what you're saying. When I was playing, like, the first couple hours of the game, like, as I jumped to more and more planets, I feel like I started recognizing more and more patterns of the game as far as, like, basically, like, templates for, like, what things you would find.
Yeah.
And, like, that's one thing that kind of hindered, like, the appreciation I had for the game, where, you know, like, things didn't seem as unique the more and more I traveled through planets, because I started seeing things that kind of ran from planet to planet.
Yeah, that's not an infinitely long candle for the game to burn.
Yeah.
That's true. Although I will say that some of the outlier stuff that I've seen is incredible, and not just because it's like the Deernosaur that everyone's circulating videos of right now, but the... some of the stuff like posted on the Slack of there are these plants where instead of like a flower, it's got this like globe that rotates. And
wait a minute. Did somebody say orb?
Maybe.
Okay. No, it's fine. You was close enough.
Oh, I did not follow that at all. Help me out.
No, I'm just, it's an abject suffering thing. We're obsessed with orbs now. Yeah.
Okay. There we go. I figured it was something like that, but it's like this weird, crazy thing that's not weird and crazy because it's like, oh, look, they mashed these two parts together wrong, but it feels cohesive in this really alien way. So, I'm wondering if that would be as special if there wasn't kind of this baseline of, you know, okay, this is kind of the way it varies that you have. And that way, when you find something really special, it stands out.
Yeah. It'd be so, you know, if this is effectively infinitely vast and also effectively infinitely random, you know, noise is only interesting until you find the pattern in it. It feels like, and, you know, this is a little bit like the design equivalent of like noise, right? And as you start seeing the way it's stitched together, start seeing the parts, it's like a weird, like almost inverse of the heavy rain problem, right? Like as you start seeing the way the pieces connect, eventually it's going to lose a little bit of its magic. What I would love, and, you know, like I would love this insofar as I would not know about it, if they had those novel combinations, or it is kind of like, hey, this is a cool or momentous kind of like design element or blip, like somebody seeing this and, you know, kind of encountering it out there in the world would make them feel good. Like if they held that back in reserve and then like doled it out or doled something out from that like extra special pool, you know, depending on like if you reached a certain milestone or if this was your X number of jumps, because it seems like the persistence of what's out there is not necessarily important, right? Like there's nothing to indicate to me that like this world existed before I got here. It feels like it's just rolling up whatever is there as I kind of like, you know, approach it. So like if they did kind of, you know, meet it out like that, I could totally see it being like a much more satisfying experience if it was just slightly more designed.
Sure. So it's like you've had three jumps, you're about due for a tentacle monster.
Yeah. Or you're this close to the center, so like maybe we're going to start giving you, you know, more of these, or maybe like, you know, the space travel is going to get more interesting. Maybe there's going to be more stuff. And there's nothing saying that they're not already doing that. I don't know, like Ben, would this fix your, would something like that, like kind of like fix your, you know, misgivings about the way that it dole stuff out, or would it still just kind of be more of the same?
I don't know.
So Ben, would you say you're close to done with this game as things have gotten more monotonous?
No. Even though I start to see sort of patterns, it is still fun to like fly from planet to planet. It's especially fun to like shoot ships, I think, and get in space fights.
Yeah.
even though my ship is kind of worthless at it, like I specifically am trying to upgrade my laser to try and kill people, since it's like a double ability. It can mine for things and kill people. But but that has not been too effective yet. I've died a whole bunch of times with that. But yeah, so even though it's a game that I think there are some definite poor game design decisions to, I still very much enjoy playing it. So I enjoy like the discovery of like a new planet and that sort of thing. Like that exploration aspect is really fun. Yeah, so I think I'll still play it for a little while. I'll probably try and play it and beat it. But again, I don't know how to beat it and how far along I am.
Or what beating it even means.
Yeah.
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 Oh, one thing. I can't believe I didn't mention this on the top. I tried to buy this for PC.
Okay.
And this plays into our discussion earlier. And it just would, you know, show the Hello Games logo and crash for me immediately. And I tried. There was a list of like probably 20 different things you could try to fix it, and I got through like 7 of them before I was like, screw this, like,
I not have a PS4 it. God damn it.
Yep.
Yeah,
and the original rationale was I bet eventually there will be some cool mod stuff for this, and then, you know, technically it's money's PS4, so I want to be able to give it back to him and still have No Man's Sky whenever he comes back in town. But after the frustration of trying to get this thing to work, and again feeling constantly like, oh, I didn't do this driver or whatever, like, it's my gift to money for letting me borrow his PS4, you know, if he winds up with it still on there.
Here you go. It's waiting for you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that random point for on top, the PC version is completely broken. And I'm sorry for anyone who's trying to play it on there.
Unless you're one of the magical people who is somehow rolled it up. I see people playing it on Steam. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I just a couple minutes ago got somebody signing on as they were playing it.
Oh, like, there you go.
Yeah, I'm not watching them. I just get again, the loops.
I think of this as a living game that will receive updates. They're already talking about adding space freighters and base building. And I imagine that it's one of those things where every couple of months there will be some new shiny to experiment with in the game.
Yeah.
So part of why I wanted to get on it is I think, one, I was really excited for it, but two, I think it'll be fun to experience that as this game evolves. I think that it will reach a much higher level of polish than we've seen.
Yeah.
And given that the mobs do not reach and hang the developers over the PC stuff, I think it's an amazing team that's already done something absolutely incredible, and I'd be interested to see what they can do with extra time to kind of iterate.
I feel like I've benefited from walking into this with almost no expectation. I've seen like lists of the features that are missing from the game, and it's like, I don't miss that. It's because because I was never expecting it. Again, you know, the difference between, you know, expectation and reality is anger, right? So, you know, I feel like I had a pretty good approach to it. I'm sorry if anybody like came to this and is like being like, why are you not talking about the fact that XYZ is missing, or it doesn't work, or it's not like in the videos? Like, it's just not part of my experience. And so like getting down to this incredibly kind of like almost meditative survival kind of thing, like first person, you know, like economy simulator, which is what it's ending up being, just reminds me of like a cross between like Myst and Free Space, which is like a pretty good place to be, because those are actually really good games.
Yep.
Yeah. Anybody have any final thoughts on No Man's Sky for this week?
No, the soundtrack is very minimalist, but very good.
Yeah, I dig it. I wonder if that's for sale, actually. It's kind of exactly the stuff that I would listen to while I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I imagine this will be a game that we're checking in on every now and again.
Yeah, at least a big updates. And I'm sure that as we, you know, variously peter out over the course of time here, it'll end up, popping back up. Ben, how about you? Any final thoughts on it?
Yeah, I was going to add something about the soundtrack, because I know it's like a single band did a lot of the soundtrack, and they actually performed at the Video Game Awards a couple years ago in Vegas, so I got to see them. But yeah, I would double down and say the soundtrack is really good. Yeah.
Cool. So with that, are you guys ready to button it up?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Ben.
Wait, I want to ask one question though.
Oh, okay.
Are you guys disappointed by No Man's Sky at all, or are you happy with how it turned out?
I followed it tangentially, so kind of I'm in Cole's camp where I didn't have that high expectations to start.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been very happy with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, pursuant to what I said earlier, like I walked into it only knowing the barest of elevator pitches for it and having not followed it. So like disappointment implies anticipation and it employs an expectation as it goes in. For what I was looking for, I feel like it's delivering. You know, I think that the disappointment is going to, you know, ultimately rest upon like whether or not just it can hold my interest.
You know? Oh my gosh. Sorry, Ben, I want to hear you answer that question. I have another question for you.
Okay. I will just real briefly say that I think it's a $20 to $40 game. So I was slightly disappointed by it because there's no narrative and I don't think there's a lot of things. There's some things that I think it should convey to the player that it doesn't do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm disappointed by that. But that's all. All right. What were you going to say?
Cool. Have you guys been naming things? And if so, what have you named them? Following up from last week's multiplayer.
I have not named anything yet because I prefer the canon names since it has like a fixed culture and rules to it. I don't want to like mess with that at all.
The canon names are actually pretty good. I want
someone to know like I was here. I put my stamp on this.
I did like that you can actually report names or whatever if they're like inappropriate as a way to kind of like filter like terrible decisions being made. So
yeah. The soundtrack is actually available on iTunes. It's a No Man's Sky Music for an Infinite Universe. The artist is 65 Days of Static. It is $12, which I will happily pay right now.
Because it's under the $20 mark.
No, because that's what I would. I mean, so like this has all of the hallmarks of what I want, which is most of the tracks are more than 5 minutes long, and some of them get up as high as 12 minutes. So for this kind of like ambient, moody kind of music, like I want something that's going to like settle in and just kind of be there. So yeah,
that's great.
This is functional music for me. Yeah. Okay, so that was a false alarm. Button up. Are you guys ready to button it up?
I'm not ready this time.
No, okay.
Yeah, apparently we lied to you last time.
I know, right? I don't know who I can trust.
Been burnt before.
Whew. All right, yeah, let's button it up. All right, thank you so much for listening to the show. It's been a lot of fun. Let us see here. If you want to help us out, really the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Honestly, like we say that, I don't know, you know, if us saying it again and again helps out, but even just like, hey, if you know somebody who likes video games and likes podcasts and you think we're funny and you think we're sharing, like saying like, hey, here is an episode of a show where they talked about this game that you really love. Or here is something that we thought was really, or that I thought was really, really funny. Just kind of like something like that. Even that small little interaction helps out a tremendous deal, along with ratings and reviews on iTunes, and also checking out our various kind of monetary ways to support us, either the Patreon or the Tip Jar, and you can find those on duckfeed.tv. I'm trying to think if there's any like big stuff. If you like to plan your travel out, there's going to be another kind of like network kind of thing in the middle of October at the Portland Retro Games Expo in Portland, Oregon. That's going to be a live Watch Out for Fireballs, but it's not just a Watch Out for Fireballs thing. You get to meet a bunch of folks and it is always a good time. So maybe consider looking at flights for that and also checking your calendar. It is a good time. Guys, am I missing anything?
No, you're right on it.
Okay. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. We didn't have Jala give hers. Shit. Did she pass?
She gave hers before she left.
Did she? She did last time.
She said Jala Chan in places.
Oh no, I mean like her title suggestions.
Yeah, oh, Jala Chan in places.
Let's hear. Either of you, do you have any that you want to throw in?
I have about four for a tentacle monster.
What's that?
About due for a tentacle monster.
Okay.
I have four. None of them are punchy to be a title except for one of them. Okay. So I have that's like a diet that ...
Okay.
I have the problem must be you. I have I didn't even realize tables were a factor. And I have silent squirrel.
Okay.
Silent squirrel is pretty good.
Okay. I also had silent squirrel. I have zombie inflation. We hellbanned Greg. Over clamped. Marketing night. Ham night. Leon loves presidents. And silent squirrel. I like the problem must be you. That plays into the multiplayer. And also I like the judgmental tone of that is pretty is pretty funny. Silent squirrel.
It's like the cousin to You Should Feel Bad.
Yep. Oh, but we did that so recently too. So that's that's another mark for silent squirrel, I think.
I also like Leon likes presidents.
Leon loves presidents. Sounds like LL Cool J. How about this? Why don't I put this? I'll put this on the channel. Revive the title game for a moment. I don't know that I will like take it by like an actual vote. But how do you guys feel about that? I want to get out here because I don't feel incredibly strongly about any of them, and it doesn't sound like we have here. Okay.
Do you want to call it down to the problem is you, silent squirrel, and Leon loves presidents?
I want
to
give them all. It's always fun. It's always fun when I have them all, I think.
Go for it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Cool. All right, guys. I'm going to go to bed.